What is it like to be someone going through infertility while others around you conceive easily, or vice versa? And how can you best support someone who is going through infertility? Relationship dynamics while trying to conceive or while supporting someone who is trying to conceive can be tricky to manage, and we are no strangers to how this can play out in a close friendship. Join us in this two-part series where we share our personal relationship story of how easy conceiving versus infertility affected our friendship, and follow along as we unpack several complex concepts like understanding your triggers, using nonviolent communication and strong boundary setting, neuro-linguistic programming, as well as many practical tips on how to move through the difficult emotions that come up throughout this process.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it. Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Okay, so this is a really exciting episode because we've been asked different variations of this question, I feel like, for a very long time. And These are all little nuances that I don't know if I've ever heard anyone else talk about. And so we're going to dive into the world of relationships when you're trying to conceive and maybe You're having infertility and maybe your friends around you aren't, or your family, or they are, and you're easily conceiving and just navigating, you know, sex with your partner when you're trying to conceive and how all of those little things change and shift. And I feel like you have so many really beautiful tidbits and takeaways to say about this topic. So, you know, there's a lot of different little sections here that we're going to be talking about with some tips throughout, but I hope that this episode will be helpful to those people who are kind of like, man, this is really hard. Mm-hmm. And even to just get some validation, but maybe some also takeaways as well. So let's go ahead and dive in.
Yeah, this is a really important topic because it's talked about, I think, in smaller circles and support groups when people are trying to conceive or struggling with infertility, but maybe isn't talked about in a broader sense very often. And there are a lot of emotions that come up with trying to conceive and conceiving. And I think you and I are really well positioned to have this conversation because we've been best friends for, what, 18 years? Is that right? No, oh not gosh. 18
Is
years.
Is it that
no.
long?
No. It can't be that.
Maybe 15?
Since I was 18 and I'm – how old am I? Oh, my gosh. Whatever. A long time. At least like, I don't know, maybe 15 years. Yeah.
A long time.
15 years. 15 years. Yeah. We've been friends for 15 years.
Wow.
So, and you have had a very different journey toward becoming pregnant and having, you know, your children than I have. And so we can kind of unpack our own personal experiences with that. And, You know, we're not here to say that we can speak for everybody and everybody's emotional experience is unique to them and is their own and how they process and handle that. But I think just highlighting some of it is going to be helpful. So Let's get started with navigating friend and family relationships when trying to conceive. And I would say the biggest thing that comes up and what people kind of ask us about is what to do. Well, people ask me too, how should I be and behave around a friend who is struggling to conceive? And, you know, you can kind of speak to that and I can too, but it can be challenging to kind of navigate, okay, so you're not even maybe necessarily trying to conceive, but you're just a person existing in the world with a friend or family member who's going through struggles, conceiving or infertility. And the biggest thing is to have compassion. And the most annoying part, I would say, for people is to be given the long list of things that they need to be doing.
Yes. This kind of goes back to like the Just Relax podcast episode that we had. It's like the unnecessary unsolicited advice, even if it means really well, it's sort of like, you know what? You just have to assume that this person is on their path. And maybe after you get really, really close to them, if you feel like they're missing a huge thing, then maybe you can kind of somehow tell them. But I think that we as people, we see people struggling and we want to fix it. And it comes from a good place, but just know that when people have been on this path for years, There's nothing more annoying than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, asking how they would like to receive support or how they would like to be is a really key part of that. And we have another episode where we talk a little bit more about that. So I would say as we dive into more of the relationships, a harder dynamic with friends becomes when you are trying to conceive and a good friend of yours becomes pregnant, right? The pregnancy mm-hmm. announcement or the announcement of a sister or a sister-in-law or a friend or a cousin or somebody that you're close to. Maybe you guys have both been trying around the same time, or maybe they just started trying and you've been trying for years and they get pregnant really easily. And we're going to talk about both experiences from our perspective, me being the one who was trying to conceive and you being someone who got pregnant fairly easily, and kind of what our raw thoughts and feelings and emotions were, and maybe it can bring some help and insight for other people. So for me and our journey as friends, you know, we started trying to conceive.
Like at the same exact time almost.
Yeah. Well, I think, well, we found out about Mike's sperm in 2015, and I don't remember. When did you meet Wes?
Well, I was like 5 weeks pregnant. Remember, I was just telling you guys I was pregnant at that lab.
Oh, at the sperm lab?
Yes, at the sperm lab.
So I remember you telling me you were pregnant at Trilogy. I remember specifically because...
Well, that must have been before. I would have told you for sure. I told you the second I got pregnant. I know I did.
No, but you told me at Trilogy because I remember sitting there, you know, when like emotional things. So,
or maybe when, I didn't. I guess I could have. I don't know.
When did you conceive? What year? Because then we can
The middle of March 2015 is when I like ovulated. I think I must have found out that I was pregnant, you know, 2 weeks. So the beginning
maybe,
of April.
Maybe I found out about my sperm sooner than 2015 because we were trying, weren't we?
Well,
we
were- I think that you and I were both. We were in school and we were both kind of like starting to get baby crazy. And so then we both decided to kind of start trying, and you didn't know that he had any mm-hmm. problems, but you, I think, did start trying for a couple of months because you were married. I wasn't married. I was just recently engaged.
Yeah.
You guys started kind of trying, maybe it was a couple months prior and it just like quite hadn't happened yet. And then I was pregnant at the sperm lab. I know that because I felt awful.
Yeah. No, but I wonder if your sperm lab was a year after me. Anyways, we need to figure out this timeline because I remember feeling when you told me that we had been trying. So it had to be before that because my sperm lab was in the summer of some year. So maybe it was 2014. But anyways, I remember thinking, because it was a very emotional moment for me, like, oh my gosh, because I remember in my mind thinking we've been trying already for so long. It's not happening. And like, we've been married. You're not even married. How did this happen so fast? And, you know, when you have an emotional reaction, you remember everything around you, you know, where you were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you remember exactly.
So that's why I knew exactly where I was. I was at Trilogy because I had this emotion, and it was – I know we had been trying because it felt – I felt the feeling of this is unfair, and I would have never mm-hmm. felt that if we hadn't been trying already. Mm-hmm. And it's complicated, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, that it wasn't that I was not happy for you. I was so happy for you, but then I was so sad for me.
Mm-hmm. And both and can happen at the same time, totally.
Yes, and very – like the thoughts and emotions, because I remember exactly where I was sitting, and I even like kind of feel like I remember what you were wearing because it just imprinted like this emotional, because I was fighting back tears.
Oh.
And not that, again, it's not that I was fighting back tears because I was so sad that, you know, you were pregnant, but it's just, it's shocking. It's shock, I think, especially in a situation like if you have a friend who maybe wasn't trying. I experienced similar feelings with my sister-in-laws who, again, one, you know, got pregnant very quickly even before they were married, and just like, oh my God, like that was so sudden. You know, it's like I didn't even have time to process the fact that you were trying, let alone you're already pregnant. And here I have been for years trying to become pregnant. And so I remember feeling this feels unfair. This is like, why is this not happening for me? You know, what did I do or what did we do different that makes this not happen for us? And
oh, and I'm sure, and it's like a jealousy thing because it's like you sort of, not jealousy, envy, and like a loss of it having an experience that is going to propel forward into the future that you'll be behind now.
Yes.
Because it's
yes.
Even if you were to get pregnant, you still are like months behind. And so mm-hmm. my baby would be born first, and my baby mm-hmm. would walk first, and my baby would do all the things first. And so like, it's just weird.
It is super weird. And it very much, especially for Mike and I, because we were kind of the first to be married. And mm-hmm. I had this thought, and I actually remember talking to Mike about this at some point in our journey, where I feel like my college experience, at the end of my college experience, my fourth year, your third year, was like the highlight of it was a big highlight of my life, because I felt very on top of the world. I had, you know, this amazing fiance. I was going to go to naturopathic medical school, and I lived with this group of amazing women. You were one of them. And everyone was like focused on me, which sounds like a really bad thing to say, but clearly it was like stroking my ego in some capacity, because
attention and love is fine. Yeah.
We were like always talking about my wedding.
We were so excited.
I know, because it was like, I was the first one, you know, and it was so fun. We were going on bachelorette parties and planning, like we were crafting, like handcrafting my whole wedding. All my best friends who I lived with were going to be my bridesmaids. Like, it was so fun and exciting, and everything was so fun. I got an engagement ring, you know, and got to show everybody, and like planning the whole wedding and doing the whole thing. And it was just a really big, fun thing. And what happened with us then, because that was a while, obviously, before we started trying to have children, that once you were pregnant, and then even Mike's sisters and other people in my life, as all of the pregnancies started rolling in year after year as we were trying, not only did I feel behind, which was a very big part of it, of, you know, my kids, because I had these thoughts, my parents' best friends are all people who they have kids the same age with, and they've just kind of grown up together. And I was like, oh my gosh, Morgan's going to have like teenagers before I ever have a baby. And like, we're going to grow apart, and we're not going to be friends because our kids won't be the same age, and we won't be interested in the same things. And, you know, I had that thought, and I had the thought that I just kind of felt like I faded away into the background. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the excitement of our wedding and all of that and school, it just became sad. There was never a happy update from us. There was never a fun, exciting thing that we had to look forward to. We had a sick dog, and I was stressed out in medical school, and we had infertility. It was like a really sad time, you know? So,
and you two were always so ahead of everybody with everything. Mm-hmm. You were just very mature, very go-getter, very smart. Like, I mean, when you got married, none of us were even in serious relationships. Like, you were so far away. How old were you?
I was 22 when I got married. Yeah. 22.
Yeah. I mean, we were like, mm-hmm, knots in that room. So you were like the trailblazer in so many ways, you know, mm-hmm. and even in your high school experience and stuff. And then you always knew exactly what you wanted to do. And you were on this path mm-hmm. of medical school forever and always. And everyone else around you, I feel like we were always kind of like, man, Leah has her stuff together. So, mm-hmm. and that's always just kind of part of your personality. And you sort of maybe just assumed subconsciously that like you were probably going to be the first one to have kids. It would make sense based mm-hmm. on the way that your relationship was going.
Totally.
And then for that not to be the case, I mean, I wasn't even married. I was engaged yet. Like I got baby crazy. My husband's a little older than I am. So I was like, it was a planned thing, but yeah, mm-hmm. we didn't even wait until the wedding, but mm-hmm. still it was like, I could see how from your perspective, you were kind of used to being in that role of like the first one in the group to do mm-hmm. almost like anything and everything. And it was like, you were so good at it. It was very natural. It didn't come off pretentious. It didn't come off like you needed to be that person or anything, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that this, and I remember very specifically talking to you about this, that like, cause I think we had parallels in this way that like our lives had really been quite easy.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I remember you saying, you know, everything in my life has been quite easy. I feel like Mike and I are going to have a hard time conceiving. I remember mm-hmm. you saying that. And I was like, blah, there's no reason for you to think that, like blah, 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 blah. But you kind of had an intuition. Didn't Mike sort of also have an intuition about that?
Yeah. Well, gosh, we have really, when we unpack it all, it's interesting because there's so many different schools of thought of how you think about the world and different things. And some people believe like everything you think about, you attract into your life, which I think there's an element of that. Some people think you kind of plan your life before you come here. Some people think it's, you know, God or, you know, the universe, whatever. But I remember as a kid, my sister struggled a little bit more than I did. And I remember my mom talking to her, and I overheard that she said, because she had a lot of jealousy of me because everything was like, quote unquote, perfect for me, you know, I didn't struggle like she did. And I remember my mom, I think I overheard her talking to Sadie saying, you know what, Sadie, like nobody has everything. Like everybody always has a struggle in some capacity. And she meant well by that comment. And it was probably an okay thing to tell my sister, but I heard it and internalized it and was like, wait a minute, I don't have any like perceivable problems right now. And if everyone has something,
what's it going to be?
What is going to be my thing? And I remember immediately in that moment, the thought popped into my head as like, watch, I'm going to be that person that has the perfect life, the perfect love, the perfect house, and I can't have babies, which is the thing I wanted more than anything. And I remember watching, I know, it makes me cry because I'm like, because the interesting thing is not like I manifested my own body to be infertile. I happened to fall in love with a man who didn't have sperm. So it's like, did I just attract him into my life or did I have a pre, you know, did I foresee, was I had like a psychic moment where I could see into my future? But I remember watching the movie Juno and that girl, you know, that was trying to have the baby and thinking that would be the worst thing in the whole world that would ever happen is like me being this like loving person who wanted children so much and couldn't have them. And it's really crazy and ironic that it ended up coming true, that that was the thing that that was my struggle. And so when I started seeing it unfold before my eyes and like seeing all of these other people having their babies and people I went to high school with, like the kids I grew up with who were way younger than me, having children before us, you know, and being like, oh my God, this is crazy how sad. And yeah, you start to just, it felt like an analogy as I'm running in a race, you know, I'm doing really well. Like all my friends are kind of like there with me, but I'm kind of like at the front, like you said, and then I trip and fall and like, I'm way behind and everyone like keeps running and I'm kind of, and like no one's even, I mean, I'm not even in the race anymore. And it can just be so like the emotions of just that in and of itself, like you mentioned feeling behind. And I have patients who've shared these kind of emotions with me too. And having an idea or a plan for your life, I think the grief of trying to conceive and it not happening, even if it's just, I've seen it from my patients who in their mind, they're like, oh, we're going to conceive in Hawaii, you know, on this trip this summer.
Yes.
You know, and they
yes.
have it all planned out. It's like what sign their baby's going to be. And I did all that too, you know. It's yeah. like, well, if we get pregnant in December, you know, it's going to be a blah, blah, blah baby. And, you know, yeah. you have all these ideas, something to grieve that all the way to the, I mean, I thought I would be, you know, 27 when I got pregnant versus, you know, however old I was.
Were you 31?
Yeah, I don't know. But gosh, it was than that. Yeah, because we found out about our infertility when I was 25. So yeah, it's but I'm interested to hear from you what it was like being the friend who got pregnant.
Yeah. So it's sort of like I think there's a name for this sort of feeling or it's not imposter syndrome, but it's sort of a feeling of like, why me? Obviously, I was so happy. I mean, so we had a window before our wedding where I was like, Wes, if we get pregnant in these 3 months, within these 3 months, the baby will be old enough to be at the wedding. Mm-hmm. If we can't get pregnant in this 3 months, then we need to wait until after the wedding. And so, you know, just because of the way that it was, everything was planned. And we got pregnant the first month. And I was right. like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. I was like, that was so easy.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, holy crap. And I felt really, really lucky and really just sort of also a little bit taken aback by how easy it was to just like have sex and get pregnant and like, holy crap, you know, we need to be really careful in the future if we don't want this to be happening. Mm-hmm. But I felt very grateful. And then when it started to become very obvious that like it was not happening, it's, you feel this level of guilt that you like don't want to be, you don't want to show. I remember being in groups at school where, cause we were all just best friends. You know, we had a couple other girlfriends that we would do everything with, study with, go to lunch with, et cetera. And people would want to ask me about my pregnancy. How are you feeling? How are you? Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. And I remembered feeling like, I sort of don't want to talk about this right mm-hmm. now because I didn't want it to hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. Not because I just didn't want it to bring it up to you again. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. This person's doing this thing, you know, cause you don't show for such a long time, but it's like, it was happening inside my body. And like, I knew it. And I could tell that you were happy for me. You know, you'd put on a smiley face and stuff. And no, we never talked about it, I don't think, in the moment.
I don't think so. I definitely was farther along in our trying to conceive journey because I'm remembering back to the emotions and it felt painful. It's like, it's different than the kind of grief that you have if you like lose a loved one, because I don't know, people kind of, it's, I don't know, it's different because it's like, especially, yeah, with, because if you lose like your grandpa, you're not like choking back tears necessarily because someone else around you is pregnant, which is a happy thing. You know, like typically the happy things pull you out of the sad things. Yes. You know, it's like, it's just such a happy, beautiful thing that a new member of our tribe or community is bringing life into the world. And so that, in my mind, typically like supersedes the death of a loved one, unless you tragically had a death of like a child or a sister or a brother or something. I could see that being more of an experience, but I have not had that experience. Because typically it's like, okay, I had this like sad thing or this grief, but like here's this happy thing to distract me from that grief. Versus when you're trying to conceive and you have someone close to you who's conceived, it's a grief of, I'm grieving the fact that I don't have that. I'm happy for you, but like, and I do have that. It's both emotions are there and they're fighting to both come to the surface, but you socially typically push your own grief down. And so it does feel very like forced, because if you're not expressing that grief in that moment or being able to move it or process it through, which I didn't know how to very well at the time, it doesn't make your happiness seem very authentic, because it's not coming.
It's tainted like a little bit.
Yeah. It's like tainted.
It's like the loss of an idea. It's that you're grieving an idea that isn't happening yet. And you know, this is a little different, but people who have lost children or had miscarriages, similar sort of odd grief when people around you are, we have a good friend that lost her son in school when we were in school. Mm-hmm. It was the worst thing to ever happen. Mm-hmm. And I remembered one thing that she said, because I was pregnant. I was like second trimester pregnant with Gage when it happened. And after, you know, initial waves of feelings and shocks and stuff like that, something that stuck with me that she said, and we could talk about this in a miscarriage episode too, just talking about like that sort of a loss, because infertility is like a little bit different. But one thing that I think that is just an interesting note that she said that's always stuck with me, and she's like, the best way that you can honor him, like the loss of her son, is to be in love with and honor your current living children and be grateful for them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's that perspective. Mm-hmm. Because he was here and then he was gone. It's different though, like you're saying. Whereas when you haven't had that, mm-hmm. it's like a longing. You want it. You want to be a part of the club. You want to be in that. Like, it is different. Obviously, neither is better or worse. Although I think probably both of us could understand that losing a child would be far worse than, you know, never having one probably.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe not for some people, but it just, that would be horrific. You know, it'd be like the worst thing in the whole world to happen. But it's just such an interesting thing to juggle. And I didn't ever feel like you were being fake, but I could see the sadness behind your eyes. And I remember really specifically one time being at your house with Gage when he was like a toddler, and Mike was watching him like on the couch. We were in that old house that was like tucked back in Leucadia, like in the trees, you know, the condo. And he was just watching him. And then he kind of like looked up at me and we locked eyes for a second. And he just had this sadness in his eyes. I could just tell. And I knew, like, it was just an intuition. Like, there was nothing else going on at the time that it wouldn't have made sense for anything else to be making him sad. But I just knew he was thinking about it.
Yeah.
That he wanted to be a dad. And it was like, like, it was just gutting. Cause it's like, I still want to be able to live my life around you. And I know you want me to live my life around you. Mm-hmm. And I know you want to be involved in my kids' lives. And I know you want to know how I'm feeling and how it was. And you're happy for me. And I know you're happy for me. But I also, it's like the elephant in the room. It's like, but we also know that you want this and I want this for you and everyone around you wants it for you. And it's just like shitty. It's just like, why isn't this happening?
I know. It's so shitty. It's like, oh, that makes me want to cry. I know Mike, because more than even maybe most men, Mike wanted to be a dad more than anybody. You know, I think some men kind of fight it and they're like, oh, I don't want more than, you know, one kid, two kids, or, you know, I guess it'll happen. And once you're going through infertility, that can shift. But Mike, more than anything, I mean, he wanted to be a dad, and the fact that it was his issue mostly, you know, preventing that from happening. And what was so sad with us, like, I remember, this is going to make me cry, but I remember just being around people with kids. And one time Mike was so sad and I was like, you know, how are you? And he said, it kills me that I can't give that to you. You know, it's just like, oh my God, you know? And so as a provider, as a man, you know, infertility sucks no matter whose main, you know, obstacle is at play. And sometimes it's both partners or whatever. But I think what Mike has shared with me, and he's very open about me sharing his experiences, is just, he's like, a man has like two main roles, and it's to provide for his family and to like create a family. you know? Ugh. And he's like, I can't create the family to provide for in the first place. And that is just really, it was really hard on him. And what was sad, and what I'll kind of pivot into some relationship stuff and then we'll kind of go back to friendships, was, you know, Mike grieved very differently than I did. And the challenging thing for me with grief is I'm an external processor. So I needed to talk. But what's hard when you're an external processor, especially, is if the people that you typically process with, your friends or family, either one, don't understand, or they're not helpful, or what they say is like more hurtful, or they just don't really understand, or they say, you know, maybe the
wrong thing. To fix it.
Yeah, they're trying to fix it, or, you know, it'll happen, you know, just, yeah. You know, and I get that. And I've just been guilty of saying that. I've been guilty of saying that too, because people aren't really taught how to properly handle grief, you know, in our culture. But also it's hard when people like you, like my best friend, and other people that you're really close with, who you would maybe call upon to share your deepest feelings and emotions, would end up hurting that person, or would end up being awkward for them, you know?
Totally.
Me to have the processing of, like, you know, I can tell you now because it doesn't hurt so much, but back then I wouldn't be like, I have envy of what you have. Like, I didn't have the emotional intelligence to probably say that to you and feel like it could be something like a conversation we could have had then, and it probably wouldn't have been helpful, you know? And so then you kind of feel like you're losing your own community of support too, if the people around you are doing that, you know? And I remember having that thought, you know, with Mike's sisters, and we'd go to family events and everyone was pregnant and everybody, you know, was having their kids, and just sitting in the corner. Like, I remember at one family event, Mike's two sisters got pregnant. Mike's two sisters and brother all got pregnant. So we started trying. You got pregnant, and my three sister-in-laws all got pregnant, and my brother's wife, they all got pregnant within a year. Like, everyone was pregnant. There was one time where I looked around in my life and every single person around me was pregnant. And we had been trying already for a while, and just sitting in a room being so sad, like, you're so alone in a room of people. And you know that if you told people how you really felt, they would just feel really bad for you, but that's not what you want. You know, you just don't want people to feel bad for you. So it is. It's
what
just
do
like,
you want? Like, how, what did you want? How could I have helped you? Or like, what could people who are listening to this, like, because I think back on it now and I'm like, I honestly don't know. Like, if it were happening again or something like that, like, what would have been the right thing or the better thing? Or do you even know? I don't know.
It's such a good question. And, you know, again, that's what it goes back to, everybody grieving differently. For me, I'm an external processor. So I think for the people in my life who I was close to,
even though we were all pregnant.
I know. It's like, I think just having someone hold space and acknowledge what it is that I'm going through, like, not pretend like it's not happening, you know, like that, that happens, which I get, you know, because you don't want to make someone feel uncomfortable. And like, you just kind of pretend like you ignore the elephant in the room. But I would say having like a one-on-one where you sat down with me and just, you know, held my hand and was just like, you know, this sucks and this is not fair. And I don't know why I'm pregnant and you're not. And, you know, I just want you to know that I love you and I'm here for you. And if you have anything that you want to say or share, like, I'm, you know, here to receive it and with love, and that I'm here, you know, to love you. And I think just being like an ear in that way, if you don't give someone permission to do that, I don't think they're going to do it, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's like, it's not taking away from my pregnancy to be able to give that to you.
Yeah. And for me, again, I'm an external processor. So if I had sat with you, you know, holding your hands and was able to kind of share authentically, you know, what was coming up for me, once those thoughts and emotions, the thing about emotions is that if you don't address them, they just get louder and heavier and they need to move through your body. It's just same with stress. You have to take out the trash. You have to get it out of you, or it just piles up and builds up. And if you don't have that release or that processing way of dealing with how you're feeling, every little encounter just adds to it, to the point where like you see another pregnancy announcement and it's like you just, you know, your entire world comes crashing to the ground because it's been building this big thing. Whereas if you can release it, find a way to release that, For some people, that's talking. For some people, that's journaling. For some people, that's going to therapy and helping, so having someone else help them process. For some people, that's going out into nature, discharging through exercise, whatever it is. It just needs to be processed. Then I can like move that emotion out and then make room for the happiness, you know, that right. I have for you. You know, I could have turned around after I cried and did all of that and be like, and I'm so happy for you, you know, like now that I've moved those emotions out of my life, I can feel the other authentic part of me coming up that's not being like shrouded in this like gray cloud. My husband did not process with talking.
No.
He's not a talker.
A few words, but when he does say words, they're very funny.
No, he's actually a man of lots of words. Like he loves to tell stories and all of that, but just not emotional words. But yeah, he's definitely better. Cause I remember for us too, and maybe people can relate to this back, like pivoting back to relationship dynamics. I couldn't externally process with him either. So I personally felt very alone because I needed to talk to people and my friends and family were all pregnant. And my husband, you know, if I shared authentically like my deepest core root feelings, it was so sad for him. Mm. And
oh my gosh, because it was like quote unquote his fault, like he couldn't handle it. Oh,
it was
no.
So sad because, you know, if I just sat there and was like, I had a few times where I broke down and was just like, I just want to be a mom so bad. But I would most of the time hold my tongue or find other people to have those conversations with, therapists, spiritual healers, you know, whoever, because it would break his heart. And if I brought him my thoughts and feelings and emotions to process, it would then add to his baggage of thoughts, feelings, and emotions that he needed to process. And he's an enduring pattern. If anyone studies any of the personality patterns, which means that they just take it and take it and take it and take it and stuff it and stuff it and stuff it. And he doesn't really process very well. So, and I knew that about him. And so I felt very alone in my journey. Because if it were, and I thought this many times, if it was mostly female factor, and I feel like I could have cried to him and like, you know, told him how hard it was for me and how this feels so unfair. Like I would never be to him like, this is so unfair. Like, I can't believe you can't give me children. Like those thoughts, but I would never say those out loud to him. But I had to say them somewhere because I had to like get them out of my system. So a big part of our dynamic was we unfortunately didn't turn toward each other much for our emotional processing.
You think that took a toll on your relationship?
No.
It's better maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. We had a really complicated relationship because we were navigating infertility at the same time that we were in medical school, or I was at the same time that we were navigating painful intercourse and low libido. So I had a lot of dynamics of thoughts and emotions. And, you know, many times when I felt like anything that had to do with our intimacy, you know, sex, libido, fertility, all of it was broken, I felt. But I loved him so much and it never felt like it was the relationship that was the problem. So I found outlets of processing. And it made, I think, our relationship stronger. But there were times just navigating all of it where I had to have some big conversations with him where it's like, we have to communicate more and we have to connect more because I'm feeling very disconnected from you. So it was a fine balance that we had to walk because I couldn't just make him my primary person for any of it. And yet we still had to talk about it some to stay connected. So there was a healthy dance that I did of finding therapists and counselors. And I did a lot of spiritual support, like people in my path who were more like intuitive and spiritual that helped me a lot. I felt it was helpful to also talk to people I didn't know. I unfortunately a lot of my healers were people I knew. Like when we were in school, when we did rounds, you know, a lot of people in school knew all my stuff. Because if I went to any appointment, any therapy appointment, anything in school, it was great because it was like cheap or very free for us to get help. But a lot of the times the doctors were student teachers or students practicing, you know, and doing their rounds. And so a lot of people knew all of my things, or I have friends or family who are intuitives and stuff that I went to because I know they're wonderful and great, but then it would make other relationships complicated. But then it was hard for me to trust strangers necessarily. I am not a person who cries easily, so I'm not just going to like cry in front of anybody. I have to kind of find that person I feel comfortable with. But yeah, I would say identifying how you process your emotions is very important during this process, because you can't make the emotions go away. Whether it's friends, stuff that comes up, pregnancy announcements, all of that, whether it's stuff with your partner, identifying how do you process. Are you someone who needs to talk? Do you need to move? Do you need to go into nature? Do you need time alone? Do you need to, you know, how do you process? Do you write it out? What's the deal? And how does your partner process? Because it might be different, and to honor that. I couldn't. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, because I feel like what I would have kind of maybe made up in my mind was that if my partner didn't want to talk about it with me, it would almost make me feel like he didn't care as much, which isn't like – true, those things don't necessarily mean each other, but I think it would feel – it's sort of like – I have this conversation with sometimes with people who feel like their partners don't – they say that they want kids, but then they don't talk about it as much as the woman does. Mm-hmm. And so they sort of feel like they don't actually. And it's really just like a difference in the communication patterns. But it's like, I need to hear from you though that you do want them, like every once in a while, because I need to be – and I actually had this with Wes, because I was like, do you want kids? I know you want kids. And he'd be like, yes, Moses. Like he calls me Moses. He'd be like – of course I want kids. Like, why do you keep saying this? And I'm like, I don't know, because I talk about it every day and you talk about it like once a quarter, and I want to hear you talk about it more often or whatever. Like there's certain needs that have to be be met with it, but with also that understanding. And it did take me a little while to understand that about him. I'm sure it was a layer for you though with Mike, right?
Oh yeah, actually, yeah.
Needing to know that it upset him and that he did want the kids and that, that.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, now that you're bringing that up, we've done so much inner work, both of us, that
good for you.
There was a time. So our relationship is stronger than it's ever been.
No.
But it's because we used our triggers throughout this whole journey to push ourselves to do more inner work, where some people, I think it could deviate and cause divorce or cause riff in a relationship. And there's definitely plenty of that, especially in the trying to conceive an infertility world, because tensions run high. You know, there's a lot of money and time involved, a lot of emotion. So a lot of this is navigating emotional intelligence, and learning more emotional intelligence, I think, would be one of the best gifts you could ever do for yourself. You know, going to things like NLP or just learning more.
What is NLP? Just say that so people know.
Yeah. Neuro-linguistic programming is like a way of understanding kind of how people are and like the subtleties of the language that you use, but even just learning in general. A really great book that I would recommend is The 5 Personality Patterns. It is talks about how we all kind of put on different shells that we call our personality based on the certain traumas that we had as children. And we all have them. It kind of depends on how it manifested. And it can be a lifelong way of how we kind of deal with stuff. And some people, when they're stressed, want to like organize and clean everything and like get everything like, you know, situated, and I'm going to control the situation. That's the rigid pattern, which is me. Some people are like the enduring pattern, like my husband, who just stuffs it and takes it and like doesn't process, doesn't want to talk about it. So there were many times where, you know, whether it was infertility or otherwise, that I had to sit down and be like, exactly like you said, you identify how your partner's different. Knowing how they're different, just like learning the love languages, is really helpful for relationships. Learning how you deal with emotions is really helpful. And that book is a key one, I would say. And recognizing that how you're different, and then having a conversation where you tell each other what you each need. And, you know, I remember distinctly a conversation with Mike where he wasn't talking to me and he was doing his enduring pattern, going inward, not expressing. And I, you know, had a conversation with him and he's like, I have to go into a quiet room by myself. That's how I deal with things. And I'm like, well, I need you to talk to me, because yeah, exactly like you said, if you're not talking to me, I interpret your silence with all sorts of my baggage, you know.
Yes. And indifference, and not caring.
That's what happens when that's not exact at all what they're thinking. And I think so many miscommunications and misunderstandings in relationship are that with friends and with partners. And, you know, I feel like even you and I have navigated some complex emotional things where there's so much misunderstanding and you take your own version of what you think based on the emotion that you're laying it over, anger or guilt or whatever, and then project that onto the other person thinking that must be what they said or thought or felt. And that's what causes rift in relationship. And you have to instead kind of float above it and say, okay, really, we're all just wounded children trying to survive. And yeah, we are. And like, how can I see this other person in my relationship with compassion? Where could they be coming from? Recognizing that like they handle things differently, how you handle things, and really having that conversation of what do you need and asking them what they need so that you both can help fulfill each other's needs in this journey, you know?
There's another book called Nonviolent Communication, or it's like an idea, but it's also a book. And it gives this very specific sentence structure for the way that you're handling conflict. And there's so much more to know about it, but it's basically like you state your, when you see this like neutral event happening. So you could say, when you don't express to me how you feel about our infertility journey, I feel blank. Yes. And I need you to blank. So it's like the sentence is expressing, because instead of saying, you don't ever want to assume intent. So instead of saying like, when you shut down and don't care, it makes me feel bad. It's like, no, you don't know that that's what's happening. So all you have to say is the neutral event that you physically observe with your eyes or your experiences. When you are, don't talk to me, I feel shut out, or I feel like you don't care. And yes, I need you to express the way that you feel so that I can know, or whatever it is. That might be another good resource in this, because these are, and also like you just said, your relationship's the strongest ever, which by the way, just like so proud of you and congratulations to you, because there was a time where I kind of did think that you guys might have not made it.
Yeah.
There was a time that when things were, like you were mentioning, when things were really dark with like medical school was hard enough, you know, and then it was like you couldn't get pregnant, and then this like libido stuff and everything was really rough, and it was like, oh my God, like you guys are like my mom and, I mean, you're my friend, but it was like my like mom and dad might get divorced. Like this can't happen, you know? And I mean, these are understanding the enduring pattern type stuff, the five personality patterns, having a good basis of emotional intelligence, having a good basis of nonviolent communication. These are all lifelong skills that we need for navigating life in general, especially when things do get tricky and you have kids and now there's all these added layers. And, you know, managing the ways that children bring challenge and love, of course, but also challenge. And the way that we then interact with our children as they grow up, and giving them the tools through modeling to understand their emotions and all kinds of things. Like this is good for every human being to do.
Yeah.
And to have. We'll write all these books down in the show notes too, but I just want to give you props because you guys are just such a testament to of like inspiration for this whole thing. And it's like, now you have this baby and this kitten and you're so happy and you've come so far in from a very crappy place where all of this around you for years and years and years was really, really hard to watch and witness.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, sometimes like healers I've been to in the past, they're like, you have a lot of unresolved anger. And I'm like, do I though? Like, I don't feel angry, but, you know, I am a person who tends to like look at the world with a glass half full more than other people, even people who I'm really close to who've had different experiences of the world. So I'm always conscious of like, okay, am I just like putting, you know, sprinkles on a piece of poop, or are we like really getting to the root of things? And I think the only way to really heal and move through really hard times is you have to get to the root of something, you know, and you really have to dig it up and go deep. And when you do that, so I remember this specific, so just to give you guys perspective, when I met my husband, and I don't ever want to give people false hope. And I've regretted in the past saying things like this because I don't want to make people think that they can change their partner, because you can't change anybody. You can't. They are who they are at their core, but there are things that can be learned. And I think a lot of how people are in the world is learned behavior from their parents, from their society, from things like that. So if to the core someone is a certain way and refuses to budge and shift, that's more challenging. But before you ever give up on somebody or anything, it's important to have tools. Like you mentioned, which I haven't read that book, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I don't know where along my journey. God, I wish I would have kept a journal and like wrote down all the things that I did. It would have been so nice because I know exactly that. Because I remember when Mike and I met, I modeled behavior that my parents taught me, which was if you're in conflict, you avoid the other person. You go in the other room, you give them the cold shoulder, you don't speak. I remember when I first met Mike and we would have conflict, I would just see, I would go quiet and I would turn away like in the car out the window and I would smolder, you know, inside. And he'd be like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And that was my learned behavior that I learned from watching others around me. And I remember I almost left him when we first started dating because he wouldn't communicate with me. And I remember he was washing his truck and he looked at me, he's like, no one in my family communicates. That's just how we are. We don't talk about our emotions. We don't talk about stuff. He's like, if you don't like it, you can leave. And I remember thinking, okay, then I'm going to, because if you don't talk to me and communicate, I will leave. And I remember he like left not long after a trip and came back and he was like a completely different person because he realized that he had like made a mistake and that wasn't what he meant. And like knowing who he is now versus that little boy, you know, at the time is just insane. But there was a time along our journey when I was always like doing anything. You know, when you go down a path of struggle, like especially with infertility, when you want something so bad, you will do anything. And I would go to every healer, every doctor, everything possible. But a lot of it was me dealing with my emotions because it wasn't like my health was necessarily the issue. We were at the same time trying to figure out Mike's health issue. And I was dealing with like the repercussions and the emotions of all of like this and the fact that we couldn't have children and, you know, all of that. And he wasn't doing as much of that work. And I remember one specific time having a conversation with him where he told me about that. I go in the room and don't talk about it, where I said, you either do this work or we can't do this anymore. Like, it's your choice. You have the choice. The power is in your hands. And I'm not making you do anything. This has to be your choice. And he made that choice. He made the choice to
snap to Mike.
Yeah, I know. Snap, snap, snap. He made the choice to start looking deep. And it's hard for men. It's really hard for them. And he didn't think that it was, you know, he thought that that was just how men were wired. That's how his family is. It's genetic. I'm like, it's not genetic to not deal with your like stuff, you know, with your trauma. And he had so much. And so for him to like start unpacking that, both of us together working separately on our roots, on all of the snarly, snaggly trauma and stuff that happens and all of the emotions, that was what was needed. If that's not dealt with, you kind of ignore and don't look below the surface, you know, going to therapy, going to, you know, transformational type of things, doing the hard work, looking at the uncomfortable stuff, then eventually the flowers fade and wilt and it's really hard to get them back. Yeah. Like you just have to, work on the hard stuff. So I'll put in the show notes some of my favorite resources of therapists and support and types of support that I did, because a lot of them are very atypical than just like going to talk therapy, which can be helpful for some people for sure. It's one element and aspect, but what I'm talking about is deeper work.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said beforehand too, ideally everybody's kind of on their own self-development path. And for me, motherhood has catapulted a self-development path like I've never known, just because if you're trying to parent in a different way or like, you know, acknowledge and recognize and heal your triggers in the moment while you're parenting, it's really, really tough. But there's this idea that probably many of you have heard about, but if in case you haven't, it's called reparenting, like re-dash and then parenting, where you as an adult are starting to do this work and uncover all of these different aspects about yourself and the ways that, you know, and our parents do the best they can, but no one is perfect. And we are going to do the same thing to our kids. If we think we're being perfect as parents to our kids, like absolutely not. We will traumatize them somehow. It just is what happens. Maybe we won't pass along the same things that we've been working on, but it'll be something different, guaranteed for sure, or maybe less, you know, it'll be something. everybody has, it just can't be perfect. It's not possible. And that's not the point. You know, we're not trying to be perfect. We are just trying to improve ourselves. And like for me, it's, you know, just as a quick example, it's like easy for me to get really frustrated and overwhelmed and like yell.
Yeah.
And I've done so much work on that. Mm-hmm. So much work. And it's so hard. And I'm not perfect, but I'm so proud of myself though. Mm-hmm. Like I will
I'm
say,
so proud of
pats
you too.
On my back. Thank you. Pats on my back for that. And that's just one example. Or, you know, why does it make me so annoyed when like something spills? Mm-hmm. Like somewhere along my childhood, when I spilled something, somebody said something and they made a big deal and it imprinted on me and da-da-da. You know, these things can be little micro examples. But my point is that doing this work now will serve you greatly at mm-hmm. some point, you know, and it serves our future generations. It's really our responsibility in my eyes to do so that we can be, you know, cycle breakers or whatever it is for our children too. And, you know, this is just one example in how this can help your fertility world and issue. And even if you and I had better communication patterns at mm-hmm. this time, as friends, we probably could have navigated our friendship better. I don't think that we like had any, not that I can remember, any fights about the fertility stuff or anything like that, but I'm sure that we could have been closer. I could have been more supportive to you had I had some of these tools that I have now, you know?
Yeah. Well, and again, a lot of the suffering that happens with people is the unsaid stuff. So yes. For me, it was a lot of emotions and thoughts and feelings that no one knew about in my life, that I just sat in my own puddle of just whatever. And no one knew, Mike included. Like no one knew. I'm just sitting here like, whatever. And it's like, I didn't need to do that. And, mm-hmm. you know, the biggest thing that I want to drive home, and you and I are so similar in this, that we see the whole spectrum of things so clearly. And like, we can kind of zoom out and like rise above, become our higher selves and look down on us as like little, you know, meat puppets, like living a human experience. But I understand the visceral reaction that people have, you know, trying to conceive when they see like a pregnancy announcement. And there's a lot of things on Instagram about how, you know, heartbreaking that is, or how angry people get and all of these things. And I see you, I've been there, and I get that. And at the same time, anytime you feel triggered, whether it's struggling to conceive, whether it's seeing a pregnancy announcement, whether it's in a relationship, in a friendship, in parenting, anytime that you are triggered, meaning something happens and you have an emotional reaction to it, that is a clue that that's a part of your root that needs to be looked at and examined and addressed. Mm-hmm. Because no one makes you have triggers. Nobody. No event, no thing, no person, no nothing. Everything is neutral. It is just your lens of how you are experiencing the world, and your lens is shrouded in your past trauma and past experiences. And so if the world feels challenging for you, or triggering, or sad, or angering, or whatever, fill in the blank, that's something within you that needs to be looked at and addressed. And I don't think that that is taught in our culture as much as it should be and needs to be. And there's a lot of external blame that's given. And at the end of the day, when everyone is responsible for their own thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and we can have these open and honest conversations with others, then the suffering goes way down.
Oh, yeah. That was beautiful. The amount of like weird energies we take on, we need to remember that we only have our energetic bubble around us, and we are responsible for this and this only. I mean, if you are a parent, you have kids that you're responsible for in that way too. But like in terms of having another adult conversation or whatever it is, it doesn't become their fault because it upset you.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's maybe if they, you know, insulted you, you deserve an apology. That's totally true. But like there is the same event can happen and people can look at it with completely different lenses and eyes. One person getting, you know, flying off the handle, getting super upset, and one person being like, huh, whatever, shrugging it mm-hmm. off, you know, mm-hmm. no big deal, whatever. And it's amazing how that can happen. But like you said, it's because of all of the past experiences you've ever had in your life. And with this particular experience of, you know, trying to conceive and being pregnant or not being pregnant, being the one who does conceive easily in a friend group of people who are not, or vice versa, or you're just a friend and you have friends in your life who are having infertility and you're like, how the heck, this is so tough. We have to also maintain that we are our own person with our own emotional responsibility, and we can never take away someone else's pain. That's not a real thing. You cannot take it away from them, although you might want to because you love them and you care for them. You can't.
Right.
And actually, when you try, it creates little attachments between you and another person, like a cord, an energetic cord, in an unhealthy way.
Right.
And really, it's not actually, this is something that my amazing therapist, if you live in San Diego, you need to go to Abby Odom. You need to. Anyways, she said to me one time, we were talking about a totally different topic, but I was feeling so much guilt. Basically, long story short, I was feeling guilt that I wasn't making any money. I was just having kids. And here I am, the doctor with this big student loan. And my husband was so fully supporting us, but I just kept having babies. And he's like, she was like, you think that you're being kind by feeling this constant guilt and really telling him how guilty you feel that you need to be making money and stuff. She's like, actually, you are insulting him every time you say that. Instead of just like living and being grateful for what it is not kind to try to take away from his emotions. And guess what? He's not even upset. And he was in that appointment and he was like, thank you. Thank you for saying that, because it is how he felt. But I had my own projections. I felt like he was probably rolling his eyes every day at me going, oh my gosh, come on, get it together. Let's make some money. Da, da, da. It's like, no, we can't do that. We have to just take care of our own energetic bubble. And although I want to fix and heal you as my friend who's having all these feelings, I can't. I have to let you be. And you have to just let me be in my own little thing. And this is, you know, taking just personal responsibility for our own bubbles of energy. And then we can come together as full healed people and have productive conversations that are, even if we get really upset, you know, maybe we need to take a minute, we need to walk away, whatever. But just remembering that, like, every, like you said, you know, we're all just actually little children trying to navigate and figure out this world. And I don't know, like, there's so many different ways that you could talk about this, but especially with your partner. And if it's different, and I know that this isn't something, you know, I can personally speak to, but infertility, having a child with a disability, child loss, those are some of the top reasons why people get divorced.
Yeah.
And it probably the root in almost all of it, there's the trauma, of course, which if the trauma is not dealt with, or if it's not dealt with fully, or if it's unequal, or if there's the communication misunderstandings around it, like, it's the root of all of it. Like, we could come out on top.
Yeah.
You could come out closer than ever.
Yes. Which I, you know, we both are testaments to that. And I think,
well, I mean, I didn't have, I, you know,
but yeah, but you've had your own stuff, like, with parenting.
Yeah, my own stuff. Totally. Yes.
And, you know, I think you're an amazing mom, and I look to you as my absolute role model. And, you know, I think
complimenting each other.
This is my dream life. Just tell me all the, I'm a words of affirmation person.
I know you are.
Guest. But, you know, what you said was beautiful in that I think this is just the lesson in everything in life. And I think things happen to people and they're like, this has happened to me, you know? And when you talk to people who are quote unquote wise, or people who seem like they have a lot of good things to say, if you dive back into their story, almost all of them have had a hardship. And the reason that people get to those places of wisdom is because they have had to go into the depths of their soul and have, you know, these really big, intense realizations, processings, you know, all of these things. And then once you deal with it, like, when you really get all the gunk out and you can come out on top, you can see the world, at least in my perspective, a little rosier. But the world is not rosy if you really have, like, all of this gunk to deal with. And so I had a point. Let me keep going on this point. Where did it go? That we as humans are on this, like, very intense, crazy emotional ride, and we are all dealt different cards, but we are all dealt cards. They're all different. Some maybe are more intense than others, but they are all dealt to us as opportunities for growth. You know, let's put it that way. And there's no escaping opportunities for growth in your life. It will come in some form or fashion, one way or another. And so no matter what's going on in your life that might be challenging or hard, if you can instead shift your perspective of, okay, this really shitty thing is here, you know, in my life, in front of me, it's happening to me, whatever. And I'm triggered, I'm sad, I have all these emotions. Like, what I just want people to leave with on this episode is, how can you take that as an opportunity to grow and shift and work through these triggers, because it's ultimately leading you closer to the person that you are meant to be. And, you know, the people who do counseling in relationships, you know, helping people with marriage or finding the right partner, is all the same work. and people who have grief and trauma and loss, it's all the same work. And parenting, it's all the same work. It's all the same work because at the end of the day, it is that we just have all these thoughts, feelings, emotions, and triggers in my perspective, because they are the little golden nuggets that lead us down the path of how we can, you know, really become the best versions of ourselves. And then at the end of the day, you do supersede it and rise above it, and you can come out on top. And it's not like the world is always sad and woeful. And you see it in so many people who've had crazy hardships, who've lost all their hands and legs, and, you know, they're like the happiest people alive, or like all of these things. There is so much hope on the other side mm-hmm. of it. It's all about how you choose to take the hardship and how you choose to navigate through it. And it is a journey. It doesn't mean, and it's even hard for me, and this maybe doesn't even make sense to anybody listening, but it's almost hard for me now to connect back to that really dark space that I was in on our journey with infertility, because I've gained so much wisdom to just sort of like, yeah, but like blah, 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 X, Y, Z is like, it's fine now. And not because I'm covering it up, but it's like, I actually feel fine. Like, I really have come to peace with the fact that I do believe that we were meant to have this hardship so that we became the people that my children needed us to be. I believe that to a core. Yeah. I think back to who my husband was and how I was, and, you know, how I handled these emotions and these relationships at the early time in our life. And, you know, granted, I have a really beautiful, easy daughter, but I don't get bothered by things that I think I would have if I hadn't done so much work because of our infertility journey. And my husband and I would not be in a good place, probably divorce maybe, if mm-hmm. we weren't forced to look at all of the gunk and all of the crap and things that were brought up by our infertility journey. And so if you can take your hardship and really, although it's hard and you're navigating through it, and it's not that going through it and looking at the depths of it is going to be easy, but if you choose to take that as an invitation to do the work, amazing things can happen.
What a gift, honestly. Like, what a mm-hmm. gift to be able to, you know, like they say, there's some kind of quote, it's like nothing in life worth having is easy or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's these, all these challenges and these different things. And it's like, yes, you can just kind of like float and ignore stuff and stay in the gray and never deal with anything. And, you know, have a very maybe small emotional capacity where you feel small highs and small lows, and you sort of just shove stuff into your body. Maybe you develop chronic disease, or you have mm-hmm. pain in your jaw or your head or wherever. You know, you can do that for sure. And some people do. And unfortunately, a lot of people do because they've never had any kind of other option or education or help or support with it. Or you can really like have the walkabout, you know, the journey mm-hmm. of the dark soul, the dark night of the soul, and deal with the demons. And the benefit and the gift on the other end is so, so very worth it. Such an amazing thing to give yourself, your partner, your kids, your friends, mm-hmm. everyone around you. But if for nothing else, if for no one else, for yourself, to have big paradigm shifts, to be able to look at life in a different way, to be able to look at people and just say, hey, I'm not going to take things personally anymore. You know what? You do you. I'm going to put up boundaries, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I can have boundaries, and I can do this and that, and I can ask for what I need in my relationship. And if I'm not getting it, then I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I'm, you know, after you give it a nice good shot, right? Like, yeah. But still, you got to try. But that is just such an overall general gift. I mean, I feel like this episode has kind of taken its like path. It's almost more uh-huh. about trauma and everything.
Totally. But because that's what emotions are, yeah. you know? And you're right. It kind of took its own path. And some of the things that we were going to talk about, I think we should save for a future episode. But that was beautifully said, in that when we talk about it, there was no way to not talk about this. Because if you're like, okay, well, how do we deal with relationships with trying to conceive? Well, the whole thing of relationships is it's built on emotions
and communication,
which is relationships. And the obstacles that come up with relationships are emotions and communication.
Trauma.
Yeah, from trauma. So you're right. We didn't initially set out to talk about this, but it's like, what else would we say? I mean, you know, if that's not this,
root.
It's like, yeah.
This is the root. This is our whole
goal.
Are
you sad? Go in your room and cry. Like, I don't even that. It's like, well, you're crying because you're processing emotions. It's like, this is it. This is it.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. Yeah, we can save some of the other things for a future one. We'll make this a part one. How about that? We'll do a part one and a part two. This is part one of how to navigate relationships when you're trying to conceive. Part two, we'll dive into more of the nitty gritty of maintaining your partnership and, like, you know, having sex still while you're trying to conceive and keeping it fun and not just purposeful, or, you know, how to manage some of those emotions, or like sex after loss, like having sex again after you've had a miscarriage and managing some of those emotions and, you know, some other things too. So thank you for this. I think that was great. I'm glad that we just sort of went off down this path.
Good. Thank
you. It's all very important. Yeah. And lots of resources in the show notes.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.